And what's back up, at it. Hoping everybody out there is having a good day. Getting the middle of the move, middle of the trucks, and NBA awards are coming out. So we didn't win any of them. Coach of the Year, Most Improved, Rookie of the Year. None of those three did we finish in first place for. We campaign for those things because
that's what we do.
That's our job. All right. We make it our job. And so then, second place is really good. I've always felt like, a lot of people talk shit on second place like it's the first loser. But the truth is, when you get something like Coach of the Year, which a lot of times is a career recognition award, and you have a coach like Coach Daigneault who wins it, and when he was getting a lot of shit in his own, gets second place, I should be clear, but he gets second place and he gets a lot of shit in his own state, his own fan base. So I think that's the type of recognition that we need to like tip our hats to.
Yeah, it's the beginning. I think the hardest thing to do is in those positions is get votes. And I think that's the thing that we're watching this team get is, they're all second place votes and third place votes, but J-Dub needed those, Shea needed those. And that's what we need and Coach D needed those. They needed to know that they're doing a good job. And they're not going to get the vote sometimes. Not every player can be like Derrick Rose and get a MVP before he's 24, And that's just unfortunate. But the reality is the list of second place, in the MVP or second place in the most improved, to me, those are things that are good. And I want to see Shea build off of that because I do believe that next year he's going to demand a lot of the first place votes, whether or not he'll be able to become the MVP or not. That's just up to the voters. I mean, it's all about what they're looking at that season.
What's up, Carson? What's up, James? Thanks for joining us, guys. We appreciate it.
And I want to say, did you see that article that was just put out that the Blazers just started a G League? Not just started it, but it usually takes 2 to 3 years to organize a G League. And the Blazers just started it for this coming season, saying that they are trying to focus on development and helping the coaching staff. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that they're going to trade Damian Lillard out and they're going to go straight up to draft picks and stuff like that? And if that's the case, man, what are we talking about? Like, I get excited about this is because Oklahoma City Thunder started something by accumulating all the draft picks. And I knew that eventually those would switch and people would stop sending draft picks out. And the draft picks are going to be, very, slim, I think, to what they can send out for Damian Lillard. And I think when it comes down to it, he probably could get 2, maybe 3 first round picks for Damian. And then that's it. Wow. And then the thing about that is it's crazy to me. It's insane to me because now if that's the price for Damian Lillard, that means like people can't trade PG-13. People can't trade Kawhi. People can't trade other stars that are there because they're going to say, well, I would rather just run with him instead of trading them because I can't get anything in return.
Yeah, I mean,
it changes the dynamics. How Sam Presti has completely thrown the NBA in a loop is the most impressive thing I've seen in so many years, bro.
It's interesting because there is going to be a new way that picks are viewed, like as an economical force. Like for a long time, we've heard Sam Presti say, or other really good GMs say that like picks are equivalent to purchasing dollars, if you having money in the bank, things like that. And if more teams buy into that, and then all of a sudden people are less willing to give up 5 picks for superstars and they all kind of do it at the same time, it drives the economy into a different situation. And maybe the availability of trading a player like Damian Lillard gets just incredibly difficult.
Listen, Damian Lillard, I will tell you this, guys, Damian Lillard will be a Celtic next year. All right. If the Celtics don't win, because the Celtics would trade Jaylen Brown quicker than anything else if they can get Damian Lillard to make it so that they can win a championship. And it's crazy for me to say that, like Miami will trade an arm and leg for him as well. But the reality is that they're going to be looking for draft picks, and that's going to be the accumulation is how many draft picks can they get? And if it's going to be other stars they get in return or other players on the team that are assets, it's not the same. So when I say like 3 draft picks, I mean, it's going to be hard to even get that. Like they're going to have to, turn around and trade a player they got and be able to get those 3 draft picks because the teams that are going to be interested in Damian Lillard just don't have the assets or the capital unless you're the Pelicans or, you know, Memphis, who have a few draft picks up their sleeves as well. But again, are you going to throw Damian Lillard into that mess? I don't think Damian Lillard would want to go into any of those teams. So again, it's crazy to me to say that the Oklahoma City Thunder are in better shape now that the season has ended than they were when the season was going on. But I really believe that. I believe that our organization is in better shape. I think that our players are in better shape. I think they're ready to go for this next season and getting ready already. I think they're focused on making sure that they get their time in the gym. And I think that's what is powerful about this team.
Yeah, and like Carson mentioned here, like about Chet, you know, we're adding our number two pick to the group.
Every time.
We're not sure if he's going to be playing Summer League or not. I think that's a question that Sam Presti got in the press conference. And basically, his answer was normal non-answer, just like, we're going to be working
the plan. He's probably like, yes, but maybe, I don't know, we'll see how it goes when he's time to play the Summer League.
Right, it's just kind of like, we'll be working the plan. You know, the plan will be on the table, and if that's a part of the plan, we'll do it. That's it.
Simple enough.
No answer, but, you know, I would like to see it, but at the same time, I'd rather see him play in the regular season. So, yeah.
And I want to see him have longevity in that regular season as well.
Right. Let's just let him, you know, prep for the season, starting, you know, this whole time. No gearing up for the Summer League and then gearing back down. Just straight into it.
So from now till then, all we have to hang on is all the words that the greats of the NBA have already said about Chet, until we can see him in that uniform. And to me, that's enough. I mean, like, that's what we've been holding on. We're watching the season unfold, and a lot of the stuff, like calling some of these guys a three-headed monster and not throwing Chet out there, like, that was hard for me, man. Because in my mind, all, you know, beginning of the season, it was all about Chet. It was like, man, Chet's going to just destroy everybody. He's going to make everybody look there and be like, what the fuck? Like, but when Chet comes in, that's what it will be like. But this was the year I was hoping that would happen. I mean, like, literally, if we were in that position, we would have never been in that play-in position at all. Like, Chet would have been that difference. And that's what excites me, is because now when we start looking towards the future and towards Chet and towards, you know, Josh Giddey and Shea and Dort and J-Dub and J-Will, and it's insane to me. Like, it's insane to me that when we mention young players and we go through this team and talking about Usman Jang and stuff like that, like, we get stuck on a few players. You know that, right? Every time. I mean, we love Usman Jang.
Right.
We love, love, love J-Will. I think J-Will is probably one of our favorite subjects in the second half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We're all about Shea. We're all about Dort. We're all about J-Dub. And J-Dub, to me, is like the icing on the cake of everything that Coach and Sam Presti have done in the last few years, is getting this team to be in a position to be able to draft a player like J-Dub. And it was everything. I mean, it was everything from Sam Presti saying, I'm going to do whatever it takes to get J-Dub, and if that means I have to trade a few picks away to get that 11th pick to do so, I will.
Yo, it was one of those things that I remember talking to you about, you know, really since the beginning of the podcast. And it was this idea that based on where our picks were coming in the future, there was going to be a lot of them that were going to end up late lottery. Because there's some, I mean, sometimes teams can't help how bad they are, but if you can help how bad you are and somebody else owned your picks, you're going to try to not make it a lottery pick if you can do that. So yeah, it just felt like there's going to be a lot of late lottery.
Like what Houston did by the draft.
Right.
By hiring the owner's wife's favorite coach ever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There you go.
Owner's wives, beware.
I feel like with I forgot what I was even talking about.
I'm sorry, man.
That was some good shit. But as far as like long-term viability of a franchise, you can't always guarantee you're going to get a top five pick. But if you can find a way to nail your picks in the 10, 11, 12 range, 13 range, like, you always see really good players who slip to that level.
It's true.
Maybe not every single draft, but more often than not. And generally speaking, you can almost count on the fact that there's going to be a Tyler Hero, a player maybe even as good as Shea, a J-Dub, that falls into that area. Like, you could have picked up Giannis, you could have picked up
Kawhi.
Joker, you could have picked up Kawhi. Like, so for Sam Presti, I felt like the challenge coming into this rebuild was, can he figure out a way to ace that second round, that second part of the first of the lottery, right?
Yeah.
That 10 through the end of the lottery. Because he's been able to pick up picks in those ranges before, but he hasn't really nailed those picks like he did with his top five picks. So that transition into
he either does
that,
really well in the beginning of the draft or at the end. You know, that's where he gets like Ibaka and some of these other guys. But you're right. To me, that's everything we need to know right there. Sam Presti found his weakness in the draft, and he went out and got the person that was going
to
help him.
So you're looking at J-Dub moving all the way up to second in Rookie of the Year, which is remarkable because, like we said, he was picked 12th. That means that 11 teams had a chance, or 10 because we picked twice, had a chance to pick him earlier than us, and they just chose not to. And he was able to already, you know, basically show that every other team should have picked him. So the crazy thing was,
dude,
now
and again,
at it,
I will say this 100 times, is Orlando would never pass on J-Dub again if they had the opportunity. Never. Ever. They would look at J-Dub as being the key to the future because, I'm sorry, Paolo is a great scorer.
All right. You're going to get some people pissed off.
I am. I am. He's a great scorer, though, man. And I don't care if I piss people off because J-Dub is the future of the NBA.
Yeah.
And that's as simple as that can be. And if you look at it, if you're into basketball, you're into developing of the young players, you say the same thing I am. Because you look at Paolo and you're like, okay, yeah, he did statistically amazing in offense, but he is a nightmare on defense, and he really struggles at that three-point line.
He really
and
didn't
that's
do great
not
on
the
offense,
modern
bro.
NBA.
There's only one like area that he did well, which was he averaged 20 points a game as a rookie. But he was remarkably inefficient in doing that.
And I know, and that's what I get it. I get it. You know, people will throw rocks at me for this, and I'm totally cool with it, and I'll take it down to the ship because Orlando looks at this draft as two things. Well, first of all, we didn't get Chet, and that's okay because Chet didn't play, so we made the right decision here. Then they looked at it and been like, J-Dub. And I knew it the second we saw J-Dub start playing, bro, and he started taking over that starting position. I knew it in my mind. I'm like, he's not going to look back. Like, the increased every year is going to get better and better and better. What do you think people are going to do next year to Paolo? He's going to look shitty, bro. Because they're going to play him the way that he showed his hand. And how do you do that? You play off of him, and right. You play him physical when you can.
It's
you throw him off
a
his
little
game.
Bit, if anybody remembers when everybody kind of decided to make Tim Tebow beat you with the arm.
That's
right?
Exactly
like,
it.
Make him beat you with the shot over top. He's going to work at it, and he's going to shoot a little bit better. But like, there's a difference between having like a good run of shooting and being someone that really makes other teams like pay.
Man, I will say this. If there is anybody that's listening to this live chat right now that disagrees that you would rather Paolo over J-Dub, like, I want to know why. I just want to know why. And the reason I want to know why is because if you look at what J-Dub does on both sides of the court, his double-double ability, his steals, like, I think he was, like, top 10 in the NBA in steals. Like, what he is able to do in getting up that court is so next level. I will say this from the point A to point B, is Sam Presti drafted this team with the in mind of the future. And what he got was J-Dub, who's far more ready to play than he ever thought. Usman Jang, who is far more ready to play than he thought he was. I mean, we can go down the list, guys. I mean, the list can go down. Is he drafted these guys for defense with the idea that these guys are going to get better on offense, but our offense and developing offense is so elite in the NBA. I mean, if you don't believe me, look at what Shea's done in the 4 years he's been here. And then you take that in hand, and then you take what Dort's done. And everybody thought Dort was a lost cause. And then you see what J-Dub did in one fucking year. And you guys can't sit here and tell me that J-Dub is not going to be the next best player in the NBA. You'll be able to look around the NBA and say, no, I wouldn't want that. I would rather J-Dub over Jaylen Brown. I would rather J-Dub over this player. I would rather J-Dub. And that's what we're going to get next year.
That's kind of where we're at. Like, we look at what we've been able to do. Like, we mentioned Jang briefly, but we believe he has an incredibly bright future.
It's beautiful.
But coming up to this next draft, we have another pick. Right now, we're slotted in around that 12th spot for the lottery. We know it'll probably move one spot either way or stay put. Like, we're not talking about a big shift. It could happen. It might happen for somebody in the range that we're at, but we're assuming that we're going to end up around where we are. So yeah. Can we find another player who has a tremendous upside, right?
Yes.
And also can help contribute sooner than later?
Absolutely, bro. I mean, like, unbelievably, absolutely.
You think there's enough depth in this draft?
And this is the reason why. is, first of all, looking at this draft, I see there's four ways to break this draft up. All right. Age, old and young, United States or North America basketball players, and everywhere else, the world. Mm-hmm. All right. That's the four ways you got to break this up. Knowing that, right, and seeing where everybody is starting to focus on and what the attributes that they want, all right? And age is going to be a factor in this next draft, all right? So putting all these things into context, I'm telling you guys, there's going to be a player with all due respect to the players that are out there, I think there's going to be players like J-Dub available. You know, Usman Jang available, Kessler available in that 10 to 15 spot. Mm-hmm. All right. Again, this year is one of those years that everybody's so focused on the top four. And then everybody's like, oh, it doesn't really go well after that. Well, top four are elite. And let's just put it like that. But then everybody is like, well, there's not much difference between 5 and 15. And bro, that's the years that guys like J-Dub slip through. Guys like Giannis or Kawhi, they slip through the cracks in these years. So that's why I'm saying, like, you know, Sam Presti and Coach D are going to be able to get that player that they need. And a lot of people are stuck on that center position. And I get it. Another big body would help. I'm all for a big body. I played, as a big body in high school and, you know, timeout through my life. But the reality is not big body is not necessarily what I would want, because I look at what Sam Presti's done with that mixed guard, that guard that can play a forward position all the way to the point guard position. And he's had so much success with that. Why would we try to fuck that up?
Yeah.
You know, like, that's what we got to keep going with. People are like, well, we can't have too many playmakers. Well, guess what? You know why we can have too many playmakers? Is because the draft is designed, and the way we develop players is designed to develop them. Eventually these players will outplay the players that are currently here. And when they do so, we trade those players out and we are able to accumulate draft picks as it goes. I mean, that's how this young team has consistently done it. So that's what I'm looking at.
Carson answered your question. He said he thinks Paolo is better at it cuts off right there. I'm sorry. He's a better player than J-Dub, but he thinks that J-Dub is going to have a better career in the NBA. So that just really underlines exactly what you're saying, Dave, which is that you would want to pick the player that's going to have the better career, right? Which I think having a guard who can attack downhill and live in the paint,
dude, and you can play forward position, bro.
Yeah,
you know,
he's got great size, great length, great defensive ability. And Brian Kay said the only thing that Paolo is better than at J-Dub right now is getting to the free throw line, and there's nothing else. And
I agree, Brian.
And I think that really
J-Dub's. I would say that's one of the J-Dub's weaker attributes is selling the foul, because he gets fouled. He just doesn't get it.
But also just being the center point of an offense. Like, if J-Dub being third starting at the season, he would be the fifth option off the bench. Like, not off the bench, but maybe the third off the bench, but fifth option in the game. Whenever he was on the court, he worked his way into moving up into that third option. But in the end, at best, sometimes he was the second option. Whereas Paolo never had a game really where he wasn't the first option. And would you rather somebody who can, score 14 points on 8 shots a night, or somebody who takes, who can score 20 points, but they need to take an extra 6 shots to get there? So they're scoring 20 points on 14 shots.
Efficiency is king, bro.
It is. And I think that's why you look at it and you're like, Paolo might go up in scoring, but he's also going to go up in how many shots he takes. It's not going to go up in scoring and go down in shots taken. Whereas J-Dub is going to go up in scoring. He's going to go up in free throws he shoots. He's going to go up in defensive impact. He's going to go up across the board. And it's going to be like that for year after year after year. So that's why it's easy to look at it and be like, he's going to have the longer, more successful career. He is a player that you look at and he's got this Vince Carter, Tracy McGrady mentality, where it's like there's no reason you won't see him playing for as long as his body wants to. Like, he could be one of those guys that has people are like, do you remember when he came to the NBA? He wasn't somebody who shot a lot of threes, because he could become an elite three-point shooter, and his game transitions in no time.
I fully expect to be watching J-Dub's end of his career with my grandchildren. I'll be honest with you. And like my daughter's 14 and I've got two sons that are 10 and 9. So like I fully plan on watching that. You know, like I struggle and I keep on looking at J-Dub and I keep on saying, why is J-Dub going to be successful? You know, why is he going to be more successful than any other rookie that we've seen for this Oklahoma City Thunder team? Why? It's because Sam Presti put the right players around J-Dub. Let's just be honest. He's got the greatest mentor, what I would consider one of the greatest mentors in the NBA, with Shea. And the reason I call him that is because who Shea has played with throughout his career. Okay? Helping him become that mentor. Now he's got Shea, right, mentoring him. He's got Chet. He's got what I would consider one of the best passing guards that we've seen in a long time with Josh Giddey. I mean, he's got everything set up. And on top of that, he's got the best, what I would consider the best ISO defender in the league to take off that defensive strain that people are going to put on him, because he's going to demand the best big guy offensive player every single game. And I say best big guy, I'm talking between the forward position and the shooting guard slash point guard position, depending on how big that guard is. Because Dort, he'll play anybody. You know, we'll see him lock down LeBron. But now that we have J-Dub, it's almost as if J-Dub could become that guy that Dort is when he locks down these top-end defenders, which just makes our defense way better.
Let's talk about that defensive unit from the starting unit. You got Shea, J-Dub, Dort. That's a lot of pressure on the ball, a lot of length, a lot of shuffle, moving feet, a lot of, you know, challenging screeners. There's going to be a lot of versatility we have with that group. And then you go with Chet and Josh Giddey as kind of your defensive four and five. That, to me, is a real, real serious problem for teams that they don't really necessarily understand. And then you go down the bench and you're looking at it, and we have these guys that have been able to earn starter minutes for this team and really progress and really come on and be capable of closing out a game in the fourth quarter or just playing outstanding in their roles. And we always look at like one of those things, like being able to get 40 points off the bench on a regular basis is really a key to a long-term sustainable season.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be able to do that with the bench unit that we have. We're going to be able to increase the pressure, play defense, do all sorts of fun stuff based on the amount of pressure that we can provide. So that's what it's all about.
Yeah, and that pressure is going to be the key this next year, because I totally believe that Coach D is going to get better at the defensive schemes. If you look at the way that he was able to increase what these guys did and the output that these guys did, I keep going back with it's key for the rest of the improvements. When you're looking at J-Dub and the defensive impact that he brings, and you're looking at Dort, I mean, Josh Giddey is a substantial better defender than a lot of people are willing to give him credit for. Josh Giddey understands where he needs to be at, and on top of that, we have him playing that power forward slash, you know, small forward position in the defensive scheme. And when we went small ball, we would put Josh in the middle of that zone that we play. So to me, it's not necessarily about which the players that we think that are going to step up this next year, because we already really know who's going to step up, because it's the development that's so key in all these players. And I think for me, I'm looking at the way that Josh is able to understand the game, right? The way that every single time that we get the ball in the inbounds play, bro, we know that it's a wide open layup. I mean, was it 7 out of 10 times we were looking at it, it's a wide open layup. These are the little things that change games. If you're able to get these extra buckets off of turnovers or these extra buckets off of inbounds plays or whatever, like these are the things that just completely change the outcomes of games, is the 2 or 3 extra buckets. So for me, I'm looking at this and I'm getting excited about the future of this team, but more so I'm getting excited about each individual player as they're becoming men and as they're learning what they can do. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, there's only a few of these guys that we're not going to be able to see on this team in a few years.
That's the longevity of it. That's what gets us all fired up about this team. And that's one of the things that we like to talk about with the coaching staff all the way down to, the assistant coaches and the G League coach. And the fact that our head coach, Coach Daigneault, has been brought in to really, you know, oversee this young core growing up. So that's really the important part, is that, like, we're not looking at some ancient coach who's trying to force the players to play this old style of game.
Sure.
Like, they're learning to play together with a young coach and he's learning how to coach with them, and I'm pretty sure they're pumped up about this upcoming season, and they're preparing for it in a way that it's really indicative of the fact that they want to win championships. They don't want there to be like any more years where they're like, well, they're young. Like, that was last year. That was the year before. That was the rebuilding time. Right now, we want to finish every season a little bit better than we finished the last season. We heard Sam Presti talking about it. When we make it to the postseason, we want it to be an arrival, not an appearance. And that's what it felt like, was we were here, and we have a little bit further to go. But I don't think anybody expects the Thunder to take a step back next year.
No. And it's going to see in the rankings in the beginning of the year. You know, people are not going to hide from saying the Oklahoma City Thunder are going to be a top four, top five team in the league.
I mean, there will be some people who vote it, but if you think about it, like the end of the season power rankings, we were ranking right around the top 10. NBA power rankings, top 10. Like, we got hot at the right time. We weren't able to maintain that momentum, but there were a number of times, beginning of January being one of them, where we got on the right roll and we were winning games, winning road games, and it became apparent that we were like very serious about making a run this year.
Oh, yeah.
We took it as far as we could go, but we're not going to surprise anybody next year.
No, they're all going to become ready. They'll be ready for our game plan. That's why it's going to come into what Coach D can change slightly to make us this team better. And, you know, really continue that unknown. I love it when we're playing other teams and the announcers are like, well, we really don't know what to expect with this team. You know, like, they're so young. And to me, that's great. Like, that's going to be like that for a few years, because if we take out the oldest player on the team, which we are, and we replace him by, let's just say, a 20-year-old kid, right? So we just lost 9 years in age, which we gained them all back those 9 years by, you know, everybody getting older. So, you know, like, to me, that's exactly where this team needs to be, is that there's this maturity of young players that we don't necessarily need a true veteran out there, because with Coach D and Shea and Dort and all these other guys that are the leaders on the court, if they're learning with Coach together, it's more powerful, because now it's like, hey, Shea, Dort, next time I want this and this and this to happen. You know, like, I'm not mad, because we're all learning together, but I want this and this to happen next time. You know, I want Shea to shut down this defender next time. You know, he's a little bit long, a little bit lankier, and Shea's up for the task, you know, or whatever the case is. To me, like, that's why I love about this coaching staff and the way Coach D coaches is it's with the open mindset of, I'm going to help you, you're going to help me, and let's get this done together.
Yeah. And, you know, watching that happen all together, and really, I feel like there's more thought process, more pre-planning when it comes to Coach Daigneault than what we saw with Scott Brooks. And that, to me, is really important to recognize, like, this was planned for a while, and this was the guy that they wanted. They put him in the right positions when he was really young in the G League, and they saw him, like, every time I see a little video from the Thunder, like Onward or whatever they do, those, you know, great videos, and they show the team huddling after practice. Like, they all have their arms around each other. It reminds me of a college atmosphere.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, it reminds, and everything about the organization is set up in this very tight-knit way. And you don't really see that in the NBA. You see a lot of, like, normally with NBA practices, you see, like, stations and, you know, like, coaches will sometimes get out there and talk about, like, offensive, defensive schemes and do shell drills and stuff like that. But this just feels like a family.
It is. It is a family, bro. Absolutely. And I think that's what's so powerful, is that the way that this organization is run is how small market organizations need to run in order to be able to keep the players and keep the loyalty. Like, I every single time I think about the beginning of this rebuild or this retool, I think of the song that Sam Presti chose in the beginning, the very first song that he played starting every single game, right? It was Loyalty Is in the DNA, right?
Kendrick Lamar, dude. I think
Kendrick Lamar.
We have to assume it's Presti, right?
Right. I'm assuming. I mean, it could be somebody else. But the point is that, like, there's not, that's, to me, that is a good leader, is giving a team the vision. Loyalty will create stability that will create championships. Sam knows that. because that's the one thing that he lacked to have last time for the championship run was what? Loyalty.
There you go, man. And Mwani, I dig what you're saying. He's got a quote from Presti, the press conference. He said, "You don't buy the paint first when you're buying a house." So I dig it. I think, you know, we're watching this thing be built from the ground up. And we saw the foundation get poured. We've seen now we're starting to build some of that structure up. We're starting to see the shape of the building. But you're right. We don't know what color this house is going to be painted yet. We're just watching it start to take shape. And it's pretty spectacular. It's going to be something, like Dave, you mentioned earlier, that we're proud of, that we show our grandchildren. And we, you know, talk about how we were there and we saw this thing go from nothing into this beautiful building that houses championships. And one of the things we got to give a shout out to Mayor Cornett in Oklahoma City, because he's trying to build that new beautiful building so we can hang some banners in a state-of-the-art statues. Arena. Let's do it. Let's put some statues up. All right.
Hell yeah, dude. It's time.
Let's do it, man. It is. And we're on the verge of something and we're pumped up, bro. I'm pumped up. Life is good. Life is about to get a little crazy, but
it's going to be fun, bro.
It's going
to
be fun.
You got it, man. The moving process is the worst until you get to the house that you know you're at. And then it's like, hell yes, which I'm sure you already know.
Yeah, dude, I've been there a few times.
A few states in a few years. That'll do it.
Yeah, man. So I'm pumped up, man. Carson, the beard's looking good, question, bro. Oh, thank you. I've been trying to avoid trimming it.
Keep all that up right there.
Carson, you've been asking us a little bit about Chet, Victor, a little bit how far Victor is going to take the team, maybe Pistons, maybe Rockets. Dave has an opinion that somebody's going to jump up from pretty far back. That's usually where we end up disagreeing. I think it's going to be a difficult path for either of those two teams, if it's the Pistons or the Rockets, to get into the playing game simply by adding one player, no matter how tall that player is. If that player's LeBron James, then I'm like, yeah, I mean, maybe they make the playing game. But I think he's even proven that there's limitations to how far he can lift a team. So who knows, man? Like, this player to me is not going to be the one that automatically lifts a team into the play-in. But that's really the amazing thing about what we've seen with Chet, right? Is Chet now gets to be an amplifier for how far we've taken things. Wherever Victor goes, he has to be the start of the change. And that can be so exhausting on players' careers.
Well, if you think about it, man, like, not every star fits with the current players that are on every single staff. You know, like, you have to change them around. Like, eventually you'll look at it and, like, let's just say he goes to the Rockets for, like, shits and giggles, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to look at Green as being a valuable player, but then you might be like, well, he doesn't play defense the way we need him to play. He doesn't do this, doesn't do that. Like, and then all of a sudden his third, you know, 26 points a game or whatever, 24 points isn't as valuable as it needs to be. You know, like, that's what happens when you bring a player like Victor along, is like, sometimes he makes it so that it's like, we have way bigger issues than we thought we did before, mm-hmm. because we were a young developing team, right? Victor, like, shines a light on that. And that's the thing about it, is that, like, we'll probably see a very similar situation as the Dallas Mavericks, you know, like, where Luka was an unbelievable player going in, but he had nothing else around him, you know, like, and I think that's the thing will be with Victor, is that he might go into a team that, you know, looks good on paper, but then all of a sudden it's like, ooh, like, wouldn't be surprised if a team like the Blazers or, you know, something like that jump up and snatch him. Like, anything's possible at this point. And I just take a step back and try to figure out where I would like to see him play. But the reality is that as long as he stays in the East, I'm cool with it.
Yeah, man. It's crazy how far those Texas teams have fallen, man. Dallas, Houston, San Antonio. They were some real juggernauts in the 2000s, that's for sure, man. They're tough.
Well, and I'm and games. People are like, you're right, Colum. To me, it's about the draft. Like, sometimes the things align. I mean, if you think about when Magic had Shaq, and then the next year they had, like, they're the ninth position or eighth position that they could get it, and then they end up getting Chris Webber the next year. You know, like, trading Chris Webber to the Golden State and creating their team because they got Penny Hardaway in return. So to me, like, I see that there's just certain years that players are so good that everybody's like, this player is going to change everything, right? And teams just somehow get into that top 10, you know, top four, top three, top two, top one, you know, like, and it's like, where did that team come from? Like, I didn't see this team doing it. And trust me, I want to see a team, I mean, like Orlando get them, honestly. You know, like, Orlando has a good way of developing their players, but Orlando is in no way, shape, or form ready for him. They've got a bunch of players that I would consider nice, decent building blocks, but there's still 3 or 4 years to having a true team around him, and it would be difficult for them because then they would have a position where they have 3 or 4 young guys that they want to develop with Victor, but Victor's ready to win. And if that's the case, man, I'm all for it. Like, fuck, man, give him to us, dude. We'll develop him for a few years and put him in a position he can't lose.
Yeah, I mean, well, we got, I don't know, we have a small chance. It's not happening. And Chet to win Rookie of the Year, I mean, the team is going to have to be, you know, top five in the West to even be considered because...
Well, he's just going to have mind-boggling numbers. Let's just be honest.
Yeah, I mean, that too. But with a team like the Thunder, if we went backwards... Like, if we went for just tiny, like, people would be like, well, Chet didn't add that much. Like, a lot of how he's going to be judged is not going to be how other teams are judged.
You're right.
So, but, you know, if we do that and Shea makes his play for MVP, Dort gets enough people watching his games so that they start voting for him for Defensive Player of the Year.
He didn't get one vote this year.
I know, dude.
How disgusting is that? He didn't get one fucking vote for Defensive Player of the Year. And there's, like, 15 guys voted on.
I know.
Embarrassing.
Yeah, dude. Well, it's part of it, but it's a growth process, and right now it's just about becoming more well known in these communities of voters. We need more national TV games for that to happen.
Hell yeah.
But you know, we'll see what happens. Like, we got dropped off the national TV schedule because Chet wasn't going to be playing, and then we got picked up a little bit because we were balling. So,
yep.
It, you know, things will turn out just fine. I think we're going to have a really big season as far as how many games are televised, and that's going to be a lot of fun. It's been an amazing ride, and so I'm pretty pumped up about the next season, bro. I got a lot of things to do before then, but I will be done in no time. So,
hell yeah.
We'll jump back on Friday, and we hope that you guys will join us for sure.
See you guys Friday.